do this. It's Hot Sheet by Baseball America. Scotty Braun, J.J. Cooper, and Ben Badler starting off the show right from the jump. And, you know, sometimes things just work out perfectly. It happens to be a day where there are multiple high-level call-ups, and we're excited about it. So first off, just encouraging everyone, if you have a question or a comment, we'll try and mix some of those in towards the end. If you don't subscribe to the Baseball America YouTube channel, go for it right now. Same with the website. Go get yourself a subscription. And same with the podcast page as well. We'll post this a little bit later on. So I want to jump right into it. A prospect profile on Jack Leiter making up to the show. Here we go. J.J. Cooper, let's start with you. I know you've been following Jack Leiter for quite some time. He was a star in college. It took him a little bit of time, but that's okay. He's about to turn 24 years old in about a week, and now we'll get to see him for the first time in the bigs with the Texas Rangers. What are you expecting?
One thing I got to give credit to Jack is coming out of college, it looked like he was just going to cruise to the majors, and actually there's been a lot more adversity, a lot more struggles and difficulties than maybe would have been anticipated when he was the second pick in the 2021 draft. And he's kind of reassessed, adjusted, improved his delivery, and kind of bounced back to get to the big leagues. This is not a pitcher who's had an easy path. He has a career ERA over 5. He's had some times where he's really struggled with control. But since he spent that time last year on the developmental list in 2023, came back, slowed down delivery, simplified delivery, his control improved. His fastball, which has always been an excellent pitch when he could get ahead in counts, has become even better. You put it all together. Now, here he is. He's going to make his MLB debut. And maybe, you know, has a chance to stick around, which is something that this time last year seemed very far away.
Ben, what do you think?
Yeah, I was all in on Jack Leiter when the Rangers drafted him. And like JJ said, they're, you know, what wasn't a whole lot to be excited about over the last couple of years, but to see what he's done this year, and like JJ said, really going back to the very end of last year has been at least encouraging to see. I mean, I think number one, obviously, is just the strikes, right? I mean, kind of obvious. He was walking 5.2 batters per 9 innings last year. This year, it's under 2 per 9. He's fallen behind in counts, and hitters are just able to sit on the fastball, and there's some good properties to the fastball, but when he's not commanding it, especially, it's a very hittable pitch, and he made a lot of mistakes, and hitters made him pay for those mistakes. But I think the other thing this year is the slider too. We're seeing him throw it with a little bit more power this year, but he's also landing it for strikes 72% of the time, which obviously is up from where it was last year. So I think you're seeing him throw the slider a little bit more frequently too, where, you know, he's not always behind in the count, 1-0, 2-0, 3-1 counts where hitters are sitting on that fastball and just teeing off on that pitch. So, it's only a few starts this year. I don't want to go overboard, but it's definitely encouraging to see some of the adjustments looking like they're starting to pay off for him.
What Ben said is something that really I think we should watch for as he goes to the majors. Before he was shut down, worked on his delivery, 59% strike percentage. After that, 64% strike percentage. That makes a big difference. But I kind of even going beyond throwing strikes, what I'm going to be very interested to see at the big league level is he locating that fastball? Because if he's in the top third of the zone or above it, he gets a ton of swings and misses. He's got kind of that flat plane. He's got the carry on the fastball. He's got 97, 98, you know, when he needs it. You put all that together, and he's the kind of guy who, on a great night, can go out and strike out 10 and walk no one.
Coming into the year, very low expectations just based on the last couple of years, and, you know, don't want to go overboard just on a few starts, just based on the history that we've seen the last couple of years. But I thought coming out of the draft, this guy could be a frontline starter, and don't really have those expectations right now. But he seems right now like he could step in and potentially be a solid back of the rotation starter with some upside for more. If some of these adjustments are for real and can stick around throughout the course of the season.
Hey, Ben, what have you thought about the Rangers' approach to drafting and developing pitchers lately? Obviously, you know, Kumar Rocker's another big name on that list. You know, there was controversy when he was first picked, doesn't end up signing with the Mets. And, you know, the Rangers end up taking him earlier than most people expected. So, you know, there were some names marinating in the minor leagues that people had been waiting for the last couple years. And in the meantime, they won a World Series.
Yeah. And, you know, I think they've overhauled a lot of things in player development. And if you look back at the last, decade of Rangers pitching development, it's pretty underwhelming. And then you see him trade Cole Reagans to the Royals, and it's like, oh, all of a sudden he looks outstanding. So, you know, haven't been a lot of success stories for the Rangers pitching development program, but if Leiter is able to make these adjustments and it's able to stick and turn into real positive results in the big leagues, that would be, a huge step forward for them.
And this is something where this will be a fun one to watch, because Leiter will be, if he can stick, a development success story for, as yes, even though he was the number two pick of the draft, as we talked about, there's been a lot of work here. I do think that the key thing that the Rangers have done a little bit better lately is they've kept these guys healthy. That was, a big problem. If you went back 19-20, there was a whole lot of guys getting hurt. You got to keep these guys healthy. But at the same time, obviously, I'm also going to not nitpick too much when they've had enough. You know, yes, they've traded away some guys also, but if it's trading guys to help you win a World Series, well, then it's quite okay to trade away a Tecoa Roby and guys like that as well.
Hey, JJ, this is probably a good problem to have, but the Rangers have quite a few pitchers on the injured list that could come back at some point later in the year. How do you project Jack Leiter on the short term? Like, let's say he performs well, but he's not like, you know, a one or a two and he's blown away the league. I mean, eventually there are a lot of arms coming back. And I'm not just talking about the DeGrom, Scherzer, you know, mix. It's Tyler Molly. And then even, you know, Cody Bradford, who just hit the aisle recently for the Texas Rangers, is supposed to be in the back end of their rotation and probably still has a spot when he comes back. But there could be some healthy competition here.
Yeah, and I think that you would look at that this is a little bit of kind of a bonus for Leiter that he's getting up so soon. I don't think if everyone's healthy, that he's the guy they want to have up there yet. Again, you want to see him do this a little bit more. He's been really good so far this year. He was really solid at the end of last season, but he's also not dominating. He's dominating as far as strikeouts and walks, but he gives up a lot of homers. He's still giving up a lot of homers. Last outing out in the minors, he gave up 3 solo homers. I think if everyone's healthy, the Rangers would not have a problem with Jack Leiter kind of getting a chance to further refine in AAA and be more of a factor second half of the season than first. But, hey, the situation has arose. He's ready to go enough to where they're comfortable going to him. And so he does have that chance to go out, and there is the potential to dominate in there that could make it really difficult for the Rangers to send him back down. The flip side of that, though, is that he is homer prone, where one bad inning and all of a sudden he could be cruising for 3 or 4 and all of a sudden it's a 4-run inning and you go, okay, well, what happened here? That's kind of the two sides of the coin with what Jack Leiter is right now.
You're looking at some comments here right now in the YouTube chat. Here's Angelo: struggles build character. Yeah, that's true, Angelo. And hey, there's Carlos Collazo, our buddy. Keep that fastball up, Jack. Like you mentioned, JJ, I mean, there's a massive difference here with the way that his fastball is playing up in the zone versus down in the zone, right?
Oh, it's when he's up in the zone or above the zone, it's a swing and miss fastball, which there aren't a whole lot of those in the big leagues. His has the ability to do that. But the difference is if he's middle zone, bottom of the zone, or even below the zone, then it's a fastball that hitters can tee off on. You're talking about the difference between turning every hitter into Aaron Judge if he's low in the zone, or turning every hitter into Nick Ahmed if he's at the top of the zone.
Mm-hmm. There you go. So Jack Leiter, welcome to the show. We're excited to see how his big league debut goes and how he fits in with this Rangers rotation. Next up, prospect profile time on a call-up from the Los Angeles Dodgers system that some people are very excited about and their fans had been calling for. They are impatient right now, and here comes 23-year-old Andy Pajes.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Why do I use Indeed for our hiring at Baseball America? Because it takes so much of the busy work out of hiring and does it for me. I can find highly qualified candidates in one place, set up interviews, and communicate with them all on Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualification preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So you use Indeed. As you use it more, the better it gets. And listeners to this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Baseball America. Just go to Indeed.com/Baseball America right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Baseball America. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Are you looking to upgrade your game on and off the field? Triple Crown Jewelry makes the cleanest jewelry in the game so you can show your style. Their jewelry is made by athletes for athletes with durability and style in mind. They make the best-selling number pendants and chains that you're already seeing on the field. Whether your style is gold, matte black, or silver, Triple Crown Jewelry has what you need. Personally, I'm more about the silver, but Triple Crown is ready for whatever your style. The chains look great. They're durable with a shine that stands out, and when you put it on, it has a nice heft to it. You can feel the quality. Your number is yours. It's part of your identity, and Triple Crown knows that. They have numbers from 00 to 99 available, so you can show your number, your identity, on and off the field. Their jewelry will never turn your neck green or fade. They're tarnish-resistant and made to last. These aren't just accessories. They're a statement of your dedication and love for the game. And that shine is unmatched. And in addition to choosing between the three different finishes, you can also choose from a variety of chains, including rope, Franco, and Cuban chains. So try it yourself. If you're ready to elevate your drip on and off the field, get some new drip at triplecrownjewelry.com and get a special discount just for our listeners. Get 25% off your first order site-wide with promo code BA2022. That's BA2022 at triplecrownjewelry.com. And by doing so, you're supporting our podcast. Orders are shipped the same or next business day from New Jersey, and orders over $50 get free shipping. Don't miss out on the opportunity to make a statement both on and off the field. Go to triplecrownjewelry.com and lead the league in drip.
So let's go over Pajes and what he can bring to the table here, AJ. This is a Dodgers prospect who is a Cuban ball player with a ton of pop, has a big arm, that toolsy type of player that you expect to come out of Cuba. And Dodgers fans are not pleased with the results of the bottom half of their lineup. So will they potentially be a little bit happier, right? That's an understatement. Will they potentially be a little bit happier if they see Pajes doing what he's been doing in a short stint right now in the minor leagues so far this season?
Oh, absolutely, because this is a guy who can add a ton of pop to the bottom of that lineup. He can play right, he can play left, he can play center, but you really don't want him out in center very often. But he does run pretty well, big arm. Routes can, you know, get a little bit better out there, but he's still young. But the key thing is he's healthy. He missed most of last year with a shoulder injury, and that probably slowed his arrival by, you know, at least a few months. But we're talking about a guy here who I know he's had a great – I mean, he had an incredible last week. He's very high on our prospect hot sheet over at baseballamerica.com this week. But on top of that, this is a guy who was also doing that all spring. I happen to see him on the backfields, and first pitch he saw in a game, home run. Later in the backfield, same game, home run. There's just big-time pop here. There's a guy who also has a chance to hit for average and power. I'm going to be interested to see if this is kind of a short-term or more of a long-term play. Obviously, what Pajes does is going to determine that in some ways, but Jason Hayward's hurt right now. Chris Taylor's not hitting, but this is still a very crowded Dodgers roster because you obviously have a DH spot filled with Shohei Ohtani. You have, you know, Mookie Betts bouncing all around the field. You have numerous players here, but Ben, the thing I do think that Pajes is good enough, is talented enough, and maybe is ready enough to be a guy who takes this opportunity, grabs it, and doesn't let go of it.
Yeah, and you talked about the, you know, he missed most of last year after having shoulder surgery. I don't think anybody questioned the power that Pahe's had before the injury, right? But like, okay, he just had shoulder surgery. Is it going to take a little bit of time for the power to come back? Well, no, like that's clearly not an issue. And it, just look at the track, the history of his development to me has been really impressive, because this was a guy, I was pretty skeptical of him when he was a prospect coming up in the lower levels. He had a lot of tools, like you said, gigantic raw power, huge arm strength, pretty good athlete. But he, you know, the swing gets uphill. He had some holes. There was a lot of swing and miss. That 2019 season when he was in the Pioneer League in rookie ball, he struck out 28% of the time. And pretty much every year, every level, he's lowered that strikeout rate. It was 25% the two seasons after that. Last season, you know, it was a shortened season, but 23%. This year, again, only 15 games, but it's an 18% strikeout rate. So he's been able to make a lot of adjustments for somebody who had a lot more holes in his swing and in his offensive game at the lower levels. Now he's no question about the power, and he's been able to make adjustments with some more efficiencies in his swing and improvements in an approach to be able to make more contact, that I think is going to be big, big for him.
Yeah, mixing in some comments here from the group, Jeff from the BA squad. Good angles with enough power and walks. And as we're looking at these, JJ, I'll cue you up with my next question for you. And here's One Eye Dragon, Pahe's plays. Comps, anything that Dodgers fans can look at with him and say, oh, this could be player X, you know, for us this season?
Okay. I'm trying to think of one. Okay, this one's going to sound bad, but I'm going to say Alex Verdugo a little bit. Like, you know, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that as in corner outfielder who's kind of well-rounded. Pahes may have a little bit more power if it all comes together. But, again, a guy who is – the great thing about this Dodgers lineup, and I know it's struggled right now, it's struggling a little bit recently, but they're not going to have to ask him to be a star. They're asking for him to be the fifth, sixth, seventh best guy in the lineup. And so I think he's very capable of handling that. And this is a guy, look, this is a hard lineup to break into. You just look at guys who've been buried, guys who've been stuck, who haven't made it to the, to the big leagues long-term with the Dodgers, who have to get traded elsewhere, like a Michael Busch. Pahes is the guy who has a chance to break through that, because there is enough bat here. And he also kind of fills the positional need that maybe they have this year and especially going forward.
Okay. Anyone for you, Ben, stand out on the comp side?
Yeah, nobody that like really jumps to mind, but yeah, kind of like Jeff said, somebody who's going to draw walks, somebody who can hit 25 plus home runs. The strikeouts are still there. I don't think he's going to contend for a batting title, but you know, maybe a league average to tick below hitter, but with, you know, the walks to offset some of the strikeouts, and then again, 25, maybe 30 plus type home run power if everything clicks.
Mm-hmm. And the thing to keep in mind with Dodgers prospects is that, yeah, sometimes you might kind of get buried. But if you do get an opportunity to play and you're on a team that's in win now mode, I mean, if Andy Pahes just, you know, crushes a few homers a week in his first few weeks in the bigs, they're not putting him anywhere but in the lineup. They'll figure it out. You know, they'll make space for a guy like this, especially when, yes, the lineup hasn't been as deep as they anticipated, at least in the first few weeks of the season. On that topic, Michael Busch was traded away this offseason, and we'll see how it works out on the Dodgers side. That included Jackson Ferris going the other way, and you know, both guys. Maybe you guys can help me. I'm forgetting the name right from the top here, but who else went across in that trade?
Zier Hope.
And I think both of them were off to good starts this season in the minors. Okay, fine. But Michael Busch is off to a nice start in the majors. He's homered in five consecutive games. I think he has six on the season. He's just been a perfect fit for the Cubs so far and was big in a win for them in extras last night. So our old friend Kyle Glazer said that for years we had an inside joke at BA about hashtag free Michael Busch. He was blocked in LA and needed a trade to get everyday ABs and show what he could do. He got his freedom, and now his ability is out in the open for all to see. So, JJ, what do you think about his success so far? And I had read something about the Dodgers being concerned about how he'd handle, you know, high velocity. He had maybe some struggles, you know, numbers wise against, you know, pitch at fastballs that were in the upper 90s. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not tracking every pitch that he's hit so far, but I think he's hitting everything.
I think that the key thing for me with Bush is what Chicago's been able to do that Los Angeles was never going to be able to do is let him move down the defensive spectrum. I know he was drafted as a second baseman. He wasn't going to ever be really a second baseman, especially in the post shift rules, you know, ban work, you know, world. They tried him at third. He's not really a third baseman. The Cubs are allowing him to just be a first baseman. Don't worry about trying to be more than you are defensively. Just go out there and hit. And that's something where if you're Los Angeles, understandably, they couldn't do that. They have Freddie Freeman. He's not going to move Freddie Freeman aside. But with Chicago, that's, I think for him, the key is getting regular at bats and getting regular at bats at a position where he's not having to try to do something that's a little bit beyond his ability, frees him up to be the best Michael Bush he can be.
Yeah, I'm loving it right now. It's a great story. So we'll keep watching Michael Bush do his thing in the bigs. Ben, great to have you on again. Appreciate the time, man. And we'll catch you on another episode of Hot Sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to you guys soon.
Okay. Thank you. And it is time for Helium Spot. We're going to lock in on a very, very top end college prospect. So let's do that. Yes. Nice. Hot air balloon time. So for help, of course, Baseball America's Carlos Collazo is swinging by right now. Let's get some help on Wake Forest's Nick Kurtz. This is 5 good minutes on Nick Kurtz right now. Carlos, good to see you again. What are you observing from the Wake Forest power bat right now?
Yeah, what's up, guys? How's it going? We're seeing a ton of power from Nick Kurtz and really more of the hitter we expected him to be this year. He entered the year as the number two prospect on our draft board. I think the combination of just his advanced pure hitting ability and that raw power made him a really compelling prospect. He started out a little bit slow. If you're just looking at the back of the baseball card numbers, we can talk about why maybe that's a little bit deceptive. I think he had better at-bats than you might expect early on in the season. But he's been on an absolute home run rampage in the last 2 weeks or so. He had a 6 or 7 game home run streak. It's just tons of power. He's hitting the ball in the air more often now at Wake Forest, which is a great combination when you're playing at a field like that, that is such a hitter-friendly park. And I think he's re-entering that top of the draft conversation. I think there's a pretty muddled group of 8 or 9 players, and Kurtz is certainly pushing himself up the board again with this absurd streak he's been on lately.
Carlos, kind of with this, I mean, we've seen it from him. We're seeing it from Charlie Condon. We're seeing it from Travis Bezzana. We're seeing guys having just outlandish power seasons this year. Is he doing enough to kind of really put himself back in that top of the discussion? Or does the fact that we have so many guys hitting for who may get 25, 30 homers this year, even muddy it a little further, kind of differentiating between these different power bats, these big college bats who thankfully, again, we came into the season worrying about this. We thankfully do have a number of guys who really are going out there and perform.
Yeah, I don't know if necessarily the power numbers we're seeing from other players is what will limit him. I think ultimately what's going to limit him in these conversations, the nitpicks you can have with Kurtz, is the fact that he's first base only, more than likely. That's where he's played. He is a plus defender at the position. I'm not sure how much you get excited about a plus defender at a position like first base, but he's quite good there. And then he's also dealt with injuries. I mean, the shoulder injury that allowed him to miss a few games earlier this season. He's had rib injuries in the past. He is a guy that does have a little bit of a medical track record. And when you're looking at that compared to a guy like Charlie Condon or Travis Bezzana, who have a chance to play either up the middle, like Travis Bezzana at second base, or at least a corner outfield position, and maybe even third with Charlie Condon. I think those are the two elements that are maybe the separators when you're looking at a guy like Kurtz, if you're not really sold on him in the absolute very top of the draft. But I think where maybe Kurtz can separate himself from some of these other power hitters is his track record and pure hitting ability. There are some guys in the country. Jack Caglione is a very prominent power hitter. He swings and misses a lot more. The swing decisions in the zone are a lot more crude. Nick Kurtz has always been a guy who has elite swing decisions in zone. He uses the entire field. He's consistently walked more than he's struck out. So if you really think that hitting is ultimately the most important thing you can do as a position player, and I think that's true, you could easily make a compelling case for Kurtz to be up there. At the same time, Charlie Condon, Travis Bazzano, those guys are probably plus hitters at this stage as well. They just offer a little bit more on the glove side of things.
I saw that Ben Badler put up a poll and just kind of simply asked Nick Kurtz or Jack Cags, and Cags won. I mean, what was it? 59-41. So actually pretty convincingly. Where would you guys have voted as of right now in terms of what he'll look like in the big leagues? Not obviously what they're doing right now in college ball or this season projecting.
If I could jump in on this one, the thing that stands out to me is what makes Cagliazzone so fascinating in college baseball is something that unfortunately doesn't really help him probably that much as a pro, which is he's a true legit prospect as a hitter and as a position player. But other than Shohei Ohtani, we've yet to see the guy who's shown that he can actually pull that off in pro ball. And I don't think he's Shohei Ohtani, nothing against Jack. But if he's just purely, if we're talking about him purely as a hitter, I probably do think that Kurtz has a little bit more hit ability to go with that power, you know, kind of what Carlos said.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually had this conversation on the podcast. I think both me and Ben, if you just isolate Jack as a hitter, which obviously takes a lot of his value as a prospect off the table, but I think in terms of pure hitting ability, Nick Kurtz is more advanced at this stage. The interesting question with the two-way factor is, even if you don't think he's a two-way player in pro ball, how much better is he going to be as a hitter when he doesn't have to focus on pitching, when he can just focus on his offensive approach? If you really want to be high on Jack Caglione, you could say that maybe he has a full grade of power better, raw power, than Nick Kurtz. So if you're really shooting for upside, dreaming on the improvements and adjustments he can make as a hitter when he just has to focus on one, and I think it really is important to just talk about how difficult it is to do the two-way thing, even at the college level. It's not the majors, but it's still difficult. It still requires a lot of time. There are some scouts who are going to get really aggressive with how they're projecting the hit tool, even if Nick Kurtz right now is probably the better pure hitter.
Okay, so let's finish the show by swinging it back to a big league prospect that we're not going to spend the 10 minutes on like we did with Andy Pages and with Jack Leiter, but I would like to point out Forrest Whitley getting called up. Still in the top 30 for the Houston Astros, at one point was a top pitching prospect in this sport, and Chandler Rome reporting on Whitley, kind of making it back up here and finally to the show, getting his first call after a ton of injuries throughout the last several seasons. He's going to work as a reliever for a bullpen that needed a fresh arm. This coming from Chandler Rome. I mean, I'm happy to see this because it's been a long time coming for him, JJ. So on a personal level, for a guy to finally make it, but I said this on Foul Territory. I remember, and I believe it was the fall league, I'll have to look later on, where I called a game of his, and it might've been like a fall stars, or it was a game where he only pitched an inning or two. And you were like, whoa, this guy's ready soon. And that was like 4 or 5 years ago at least. So this stuff happens all the time.
It's something where if you'd have told me in 2017 or 2018 that, that we would wait this long, that Forrest Whitley would not be a solid reliever, solid starter, I should say, in the big leagues, I would have said, injuries probably cropped up, right? And that's been a big part of it. But he has really also kind of taken a step back. He has struggled to be, I don't think right now that he's as good as he was in 2017, 2018. But it is good to see him get to the big leagues. Being on the 40-man is a very useful thing in a time where the Astros pitching staff is in desperate need of fresh arms. He is a relatively fresh arm. I am a little concerned. He's just still transitioning to a relief role, and he's kind of been on a one inning every 3 day schedule in the minors. If he's up for longer than just a quick up and down, that's kind of not the normal usage patterns in the big leagues. So he's going to have to kind of do a little bit of on the job learning. But I think more than anything, he's a fresh arm. They need that. And I don't want to make it sound like that he's sitting there and he's lobbing it up at 88, 90 or anything. He's still 96, 97. I think you'll even maybe see an 8 out of him. Just isn't missing as many bats as he used to, and the secondaries aren't as sharp as they were. But again, he's now a big leaguer. It is very cool to see that, and hopefully this gives him a chance to kind of build on that and kind of put a lot of these setbacks, a lot of these injuries behind him.
Yeah, 26 years old, making it up to the show. Carlos, do you remember seeing him a while back and thinking, damn, and this guy has potential to be, a one or a two in the big leagues?
Yeah, when he was a prospect coming out of high school, that would have been even before my time at BA. That's how long it's been. But I do remember just seeing the caliber of prospect he was, reading BA and being so excited about him. And I think it really speaks to the risk that you have with the high school pitching demographic. It's maybe one of the scariest demographics for teams in the draft. We saw just one high school right-handed pitcher taken in the first round a year ago. But I think it's cool just to see him finally make this. It's been a long path for him. Excited to see the adjustments he's able to make as a reliever, if he can kind of hone in some of this command, get the secondaries a little bit more crisp. But cool to see him finally make it, and we'll see what he's able to do.
Good day for prospect call-ups. So thanks for watching, Hot Sheet, to everyone. Please, you know, like, subscribe this video, the Baseball America YouTube channel that you're sitting on right now to watch this, or if you're listening, Apple, Spotify, rate, review, you know what to do. This is a cool day for us to be able to do a show. We'll have individual segments on the profiles that we did with Andy Pajes and Jack Leiter. So, JJ, enjoy those debuts, right? Let's have fun and kick back.
It'll be fun, man.
Yeah, it will. Carlos, thank you as always. Good to see you, man.
See you guys.
Cheers, everyone. Thanks for watching Hot Sheet or listening. See you next week.